Okay, here we go.
Dixie, just before you dive into your next question, I was a little bit concerned that in the last exchange with Chris, there might have been a little bit of a mismatch between the question and the answer, because, and Kevin, you can expand on this more, but as I understood it, Kevin was expressing his concerns with the model, the risk model, and part of your question I heard you ask something about evaluation model, and so...
Yeah, I was focused on the credit models, really talking about the evaluation model at all, and that answer.
So the weighted value at risk that's mentioned in the memos, the WVAR, is that an output of the credit model, the Gorton model?
Yes.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay, but that's different than
that's
evaluation model.
Correct, right. That is correct.
Okay.
Right.
Is that?
What is that? Yeah, but let me ask, is there just one Gorton model? Because maybe I'm misunderstanding what I'm reading, but I of course know about the Gorton model that is initially used to figure out where the attachment point has to be so that you guys will write the CDS on the super senior. I thought there was perhaps a offshoot modification of that model that was the VAR model. Is it the same model or are there two different
say
models?
That question one more time.
My understanding is that Gorton does a model, at least this is how it's described in PwC papers.
In case you're wondering where your understanding derives from.
It says, you know, Gorton does this model that essentially says where the attachment point needs to be for you guys to write the CDS on the super senior, that you have sufficient subordination.
Correct.
For the 99.85% likelihood that housing prices since the World War II will not result in losses. I butchered that, but generally that's what it says. But I don't. It's not my understanding that that's the same thing as the VAR model. What's your understanding?
I think of the Gorton. We call it the worst case VAR model because it goes out to that 99.85%. Whereas a VAR model is usually fewer standard deviations. The term VAR, though, as you know, is a market risk term. So I don't know how to answer that question because I don't know what is really being what PwC said. I don't know, obviously, what PwC said to you, but the Gorton model, as we think of it in the credit side, is exactly what you described. It's an attempt to estimate how much cushion under worst case VAR assumptions that you have with the subordination and the collateral characteristics that you have. That's what that's attempting to do.
Okay.
So it's you know, trying to get to the credit issue. It's not trying to say anything about valuation.
Sure. And I understanding that, are you aware whether or not there is a second model, whether it's Gorton or otherwise, that the company used, you know, to analyze value, whatever, the super senior CDS portfolio, other than the binomial expansion technique model
not,
that comes into play
right,
in the third
later on, yeah. Seven. I don't know. I do not know of any other model.
Okay, thank you.
So I, as promised.
The other thing, if I could
sure,
clarify one other thing, because I really want to make it's very important, terms are very important, as you guys know very well. Which is this question of economic and credit losses, because you know, to the common layman, an economic loss is essentially the mark-to-market losses. That's what they would think. When I'm talking about losses, and I'm talking about credit losses, principal losses that would erode the attachment point, and that would result in real principal default losses in these CDOs. That's what I'm talking about. So I want to be careful about those terms because, I mean, as you know, the market kind of goes into a tailspin and there are different market prices being attached to a lot of this stuff. But my focus is always on, are we going to lose principal? That's what my job description says. Worry about the principal losses in the credit portfolio of all of AIG.
And if you had known about the mark-to-market triggers in the contracts, would that focus have also included whether or not there could potentially be a mark on the book that would require an unrealized valuation allowance to be recorded?
That's a hypothetical, and I you know, possibly yes, okay. But I did not.
So, as I mentioned before, we have a few of these mm-hmm. Credit Risk Committee meeting minutes, and this is one that I've just given you a copy of that is from, it looks like the meeting, it's dated Tuesday, May 22nd, 2007, which I assume is when the meeting took place, and the minutes are dated May 31st, 2007. It's AIG SEC 9406809 through 816. Do you want to take a minute to look at these, or the?
Sure.
So it's sort of a standard form. Starts with approving the previous month's meeting minutes. It says the second item is a review of recent Credit Risk Committee approvals. It goes through transactions for different business units, starting with AIG Consumer Finance Group, then going on to AIG Financial Products, and some other business units, it looks like. Do these meeting minutes look familiar to you?
Yes.
The specific ones or the general format?
The general format.
The general format?
This is last year. Something.
Who would have drafted these meeting minutes?
Barbara Lieveno, who is the Director of Financial Institutions, and who is also Secretary of the Credit Committee.
So
she drafts them usually.
That's right. You said that before. The paragraph descriptions of the different transactions, is this roughly the level of detail that would have been provided typically?
Yes. We had, at some point, expanded a little bit from the earlier in the history of in my evolution as Chief Credit Officer, and put a few more details in these things as time would go on.
And not to hide the ball, I think this is the earliest dated one we have.
Okay.
So far, anyway. And so you're saying that this one might have had more information than earlier ones, or this one probably would have had less, and then later
hard
on
hard to
there
say.
Would have been
I
more.
Think the hard to say. I think these would probably be typical. We may have had, you know, a little few more details in this as time would go on. We tried to make these as helpful to people that did not attend the meeting, such as our CEO, who would get copies of it, and PwC, who also got copies of this, as possible to help people understand what we discussed at the meetings.
Mm-hmm. And up at the top, there's a present line, which I assume are members of the committee.
The present ones, the one when it says present, that would be the members of the committee, correct?
And then there's a guest line.
Right.
And I note that it includes Mr. Diaz-Perez, Mr. Forster, and Mr. Gorton,
mm-hmm.
all of whom are from Financial Products.
Correct.
Were they regular guests at these meetings?
No.
So this would
have... Well, I shouldn't say that. Mr. Perez, Diaz-Perez was. He was a regular... I had always extended invitation to him to... listen usually by conference call.
He was located in London?
No, he's in Wilton, Connecticut.
I see.
And he would generally participate by conference call. Mr. Foster and Mr. Gorton usually did not attend that.
The deals that are listed on here, would these be all of the deals that had been approved since the last meeting, or would they only be a selection?
No, it would be a selection of key ones that we may have discussed, or in fact, we've probably discussed more than this, but this would be a summary of some of the main ones.
And how would you decide which ones to sort of give more detail on?
I don't think there was any particular characteristics of the ones we decided to write up in the minutes. We would usually try to give a sample of approvals that we had done during the course of the meeting, I think, we usually started off with the Consumer Finance Group and then went to FP and then on to the Investment Department and then in the Insurance Departments, which sort of the flow. We try to give a representative sample of some of the
approvals that we did.
So Barbara would have?
Barbara would have selected them, and I would have said, well, that looks reasonable. Yeah.
Did Bob Lewis ever come to these meetings?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so just because he's not on this one, I don't think he was on this one.
Oh, yeah, no, he was. He frequently would attend it. Bob doesn't miss that many meetings with the credit committee.
Okay. Yeah. What about Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Sullivan does not attend.
You had mentioned before that he was an ex officio member of
right.
the credit risk committee. So was that just a title and he never showed up, or did he actually come to any of these?
No, he did not come, but it was always an open invitation for him to attend them. I don't remember Martin ever coming to them.
So if you turn to page 7, it's item number 14.
Mm-hmm.
It's titled Discussion on the Current State of AIG FP's Exposure to Super Senior AAA Plus Credit Default Swaps. You want to just take a minute
yeah, sure.
and look through this. If you look, I'm going to start from the bottom of the page instead of the top of the paragraph. I think it's 6 lines up from the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
The middle of the line starts a new sentence. AIG FP's U.S. subprime exposure was reviewed in detail.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this meeting?
Not well, no.
Do you remember this discussion of the FP subprime exposure?
Don't remember well to be candid with you, but I think I may have even actually requested that they come down and talk about debt exposure.
Well, that was my next question. What prompted the CRC to review the subprime exposure?
I won't say this categorically, but I believe I asked for a review.
Do you remember why you would have asked for that review?
The date of this is May 22nd, 07. At this point, there are some significant developments happening in the general mortgage market. HSBC reports a big loss on its household finance business, subprime business in the United States. I think there was a couple of bankruptcies of some of the mortgage originators, or some of them, not their bankruptcies, but there are some issues going on. So I think at this point, I may have asked them to come down and talk about their comfort levels around the existing positions.
To your knowledge, was this subject ever discussed at earlier meetings, or is this a special case? Excuse me.
let me ask you to repeat that question, because I'm not sure what you're really asking.
The review of the FP subprime exposure, you asked them to come down and talk about it at this meeting because
right.
you were concerned about some market events that had happened.
Right, right.
Was the issue or the subject of FP subprime exposure ever discussed at earlier meetings for different reasons or for any reason?
Well, obviously during that whole, during the approval process, it's probably in early 06, I'm talking a bit about subprime and those issues. But we were doing a portfolio review, which I don't know when that happened in 06 or even 07, but there's probably some conversations going on, but I think this is the first time where I'm asking them for an update on what's going on with the portfolio.
And we may have discussed this earlier, but would the portfolio reviews have specifically looked at residential mortgage exposure or subprime mortgage exposure among other asset groups?
It might have. I don't recall.
Or would it have been more focused on AAA, AA?
It would be the whole. Usually, the FP portfolio reviews, as I recall them, were on everything. We would cover the gamut of the major exposures.
So, further down at the bottom, it says, it is notable, this is the starting on the fourth line from the bottom and going to the third. It is notable that AIGFP stopped writing protection on portfolios with subprime mortgage exposure in December 2005. And could you get this? This is not, I just have some questions about that because we have gotten information from the company since our investigation started on all of the deals that AIGFP did in the multi-sector area. And as you recalled, I showed you the last one you said that was done with subprime was, I think, in May of 2006 for Hope Bay for Goldman Sachs.
Right.
And so this is a chart of all of the multi-sector CDS deals as we have it from the company.
Mm-hmm.
There's a column on here. Oh, I might have one of those. I'm so sorry. There's a column on here that indicates whether or not the deal has subprime collateral or not. And the lines that are highlighted in yellow are the ones that are closed in 2006. And I will represent to you that there are 14 of them.
Mm-hmm.
So did the credit review committee not know? I mean, so these meeting minutes are dated May of 07. There's a statement here, AIGFP stopped writing these in December of 05. And now we have this chart that shows there are...
I'm aware of this issue. And I think this is an unfortunate phraseology in these minutes because I think what it's meant to say is they've stopped committing to counterparties to write CDS by the end of 05. But there was, in fact, a number of transactions they had committed to in 05 that were not written and securitized, you know, put on the books until the first quarter of 06. The Halk Bay deal is a special deal in the sense that they call me up and say, we've got one transaction. We've added the business, but we have one transaction that has such a high level of collateral, of subordination, I think it was like 45 to 50%. That we would like to do this deal on an exceptional basis. That's, I hope that clarifies it.
No, I just want to go back to the, if I can find the Halk Bay one. And have you show me.
Mm-hmm.
Here, I have the copy of it.
Yep.
It's the May 16th, 06.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, then I'm wrong about this one because this looks like it's got less collateral, doesn't it?
The percentage buffer that I see listed is 15%. Is that what you see?
Well, I'm looking at it'd be three or four lines from the bottom on the transaction summary. If AIGFP receives such security as a result of the trigger of the payment obligation of the credit derivative upon payment default, AIGFP will have exposure to the second 55% of losses arising in respect of the portfolio held by the CDO for the expected term of 8.2 years. That's why my memory is about the subordination being much higher.
So I guess the question is how to reconcile that with the table.
Yeah, exactly. And without reading the whole thing, it'd be hard to know.
So maybe this is just something that we can look at, and then if we need to, we can get back to you or someone else at the company.
Right.
When you mentioned that the wording wasn't as accurate as could have been, and it was really the AIG had stopped committing to writing subprime supersedure CDS. I know I butchered that a little, but the keyword being committed for legally binding commitments.
I don't know. Though that was the in the record of the committee minutes, all our logs and everything will show that, with the exception of the Halk Bay transaction, exactly as Dixie said, there were transactions that were done in the first quarter of 2006. No question about it.
So, excuse me one second. I somehow seem to have misplaced my version of the minutes. Okay, I'm sure. No, not this, the minutes. But oh. I think further in that paragraph it says 2006 and 2005, vintage exposures are $2.37 billion and $24.9 billion respectively. So $2.37 billion in 2006 and $24.9 billion in 2005. Where would this information have come from?
Probably there's there may have been an attachment to this presentation. I think there was a presentation that was given by the FP people that probably had some information in that. That was probably the source of that statement.
Was it typical for there to be presentations at these minutes, at these meetings?
Not typical, but because I had asked for this one, certainly as part of our portfolio review process, there's quite, if you have to see one, it's an extensive bundle of information that's provided as part of the portfolio reviews. This one, since it's sort of a special case where they presented to the CRC, I believe there was a document that was presented as part of it, and I think Barbara is making best efforts to summarize that.
So you would have relied on what FP presented at this meeting for these numbers?
I believe that's correct. I believe we did, yes.
Okay.
I don't think these are our own numbers.
And then if you turn to the last page, the last sentence before the minutes were taken by says CRM views AIG FP's subprime exposures as being well contained. I assume this is the credit risk management.
That is us.
CRM.
That is correct.
And so on what basis did you make that determination?
I think on the basis of the fact that we felt that the losses that were going to, about the principal losses, the credit loss, lifetime credit losses within the deals were not going to exceed the attachment points.
So
we would hold that view because of the vintages of the mortgages, predominantly, so much of it being 04 and 05, the vintages of the underlying collateral itself, we would hold that view for quite some time through 2005. Through 2007.
So help me understand, and based on sort of that description and the statement here, one of the things that we've been told is that there have been few, if any, actual economic losses on the portfolio, even as it exists today, managed in the Maiden Lane III structure with the New York Fed and Treasury. So is it just not the credit risk management function's role to assess the other issues that might have come up in this portfolio with respect to the subprime risk? Because seems to me that if it's true that if the economic losses still to this day haven't actually been realized, then you could make the statement today about the subprime exposure being well contained. And I'm just trying to get a sense of the role of your department in this assessment.
Yeah, I mean, we our mission is to look at the credit part of this portfolio. That was what we were focused on. I'm happy to hear that statement that you made about there not being any principal losses. To be honest with you, since this is now, of course, as you know, in the Maiden Lane III structure, we don't get that kind of detail. But
we haven't finalized our conclusions on that. We're in the process of confirming that.
But we were looking at the credit side of this business, and that was our mission. And we were thinking of these transactions as being very much a transactions that we were not aware of collateral call issues. To be honest with you, it didn't even remotely pass my mind that there would be. I thought if this is very much the way many of the monoline companies had written this business. My job was to basically look at the principal losses. That's what my job and my department's job was to look at that issue. And at this point, we're reasonably comfortable these are not going to present, they're not going to eat through the attachment points. We'll change that at some time in the early part of 08, but, and, you know, as you know, we will publish some estimates of what our losses, we think our principal losses are going to be, but at this early stage, we don't see the market cratering that bad, that we don't, whether we think that the credit losses are going to be produced.
Actually, will you give me a reference for when you said you published what you thought the credit losses would be? And I'm specifically talking about the multi-sector CDS portfolio.
Yeah, I think we will estimate our modeled losses, and this is a matter of public filings. You can look it all up. Is I think in Q4 08.
So after.
I think there was earlier.
Yeah. I think earlier in 08 than that.
Q1, I think there was. Some
I'm sorry. What did I say? I meant Q4 07. I think when we filed our 10-K.
So the 10-K for 07.
That's correct, right. Now that I think about it, that's correct. That's absolutely right.
And just to be clear, you're not talking about unrealized valuation.
No, we're talking about actual potential losses.
Okay. And again, in terms of these credit committee minutes, when you conclude that your exposure to subprime is, whatever the word was, well-contained, at that time, you don't know yet about the mark-to-market triggers in the contracts.
I don't.
Understanding you don't remember exactly when you learned about that, other than after the collateral call comes in, what do you do when you hear about that there's mark-to-market triggers in the contracts and that people are demanding collateral to be posted when, for years now, you were working under the assumption there were none?
I don't think we were. I was happy to hear this.
I hope that's an understatement.
It is. I tend to use understatements sometimes. But we are a very large company with a large balance sheet, and I don't think I am thinking the worst. I think it's more, at, if you will, at this point, a problem, but I don't, it's hard for me to know how to measure that problem at this stage of the game.
Did you talk to anybody? Have discussions like
this really fell into the domain of Bob Lewis, Eliza Bifigli, Joe Pisano. This is really the crowd that was really working on this.
Do you know if any of, did you have discussions with anybody about, you know, who agreed to these terms?
Yeah, Bob Lewis was, I think, the one that told me that there were these collateral calls.
I understand that, but did you have any discussions with Mr. Lewis or anybody else, you know, about who agreed to have these kinds of terms of these contracts?
Apart from Bob Lewis, no. I don't recall. Well, probably with Elias Sabayan at this point as well.
And what did they say in terms of who had agreed to those kind of terms in those contracts?
Who had agreed? Well, FP had obviously agreed to them. I don't know which.
All I'm getting at is who knew throughout this? I mean, obviously, the people that signed the contracts, I would argue, knew. I hope they knew. But understanding it was a surprise for you, you know, for example, what was it a surprise to Lewis, to Abide, to Cassano, to, you know, the various other folks, if you know?
The only person I will ask is. Ed Diaz, whether he knew, he told me he did not know, and so I don't have extensive conversations at this stage with anyone about that. I'm leaving it to my, you know, my colleagues to address that point.
Do you have more questions on this?
No.
Okay. So I'm going to move on a little bit now, chronologically.
Did you want the specs?
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes. To an email. The top of the email is, I mean, it's a chain of emails, but the top is dated July 2nd, 2007, from you to Bob Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bates is AIG SEC 9408014. It has an attachment that goes through 9408023. Sorry, I don't have an extra copy of this one. So it looks like this is Moody's sent AIG a credit derivative survey. The first email below is June 26, 2007. and it says it's part of their, yeah, a little bit below, on the next page, on the second page, it says, as part of our ongoing analytical process, Moody's is conducting a survey of credit derivative positions held by insurers, including exposure to CDOs, CDS, and single name sector concentration. Do you remember getting this survey from Moody's?
Not well, but I've
received it. Do you have any reason to believe you didn't receive it?
No.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, no.
And then you forwarded to Bob Lewis several days later and say you have FP and AIG, GIG working on it.
That's the investment department.
The investment group. Is that, what does GIG stand for?
AIG, Global Investment Group.
Global Investment Group. And then you say, I have to tell you that it's very invasive in my judgment as they're looking for detailed trade information on our CDS and CDO exposures. We may have little choice, but it worries me to give them that level of granularity. So and it's actually rather hard to read the attachment, the actual questions in the survey. But I just am curious if you recall now why you thought the survey was invasive.
Well, they were asked, I don't recall exactly, but I can guess that they were asking for particular counterparty exposures. You know, they have an example of Ford Motor Company, things of that type. And they wanted extensive information. And I think I was just saying, you know, why are they asking for so much?
And do you remember what Bob Lewis's response was?
I don't, no.
It was part of the concern about the level of granularity being requested about disclosing the level of subprime exposure?
No, I don't think that was the origin of my concern. That would be my reaction. So I think I was thinking of, this is a very comprehensive survey, as I recall, covering all kinds of CDS of any kind.
And what happened after you got this survey? Do you remember what the result was? Did you provide?
I think we provided all the information to Moody's as they requested it. So that's my recollection.
Was there any pushback from FP?
I don't recall. I don't recall that.
Give me just 1 minute. I'm going to pull a couple of other documents together. Did you get this one? Oh, great. Mm-hmm. Give me this. So it took a minute to look at this one. This is an email from you to Andrew Forster, Cece Cassano, and Ed Diaz on July 17th, 07. AIG SEC 940-6777 through 6781. So here I just wanted to ask you if I have the right one, which I think I do. So it looks like the below email is Andrew Forster. That you respond to, mm-hmm. And he's giving net notional numbers. I believe this is of the multi-sector CDS book, but you could correct me if I'm wrong. Oh, that's not. I don't think that we have the. Yeah, that's the right one, but this is not the same one. I don't know what this is.
Well, that's what I have too.
Oh, it's just
I might have added one back.
Oh,
staple.
So look at the first part of it. It's what I'm. Turn back a couple of pages.
I'm sorry. You want
Do you have this net exposure after subordination?
Page 2 of 9.
Yes.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so it says current total notional of $68 billion. And then if you turn the page, it says CDO notional with 0% subprime exposure is $4.6 billion.
Right.
So if I'm going to look at the portfolio, the multi-sector portfolio, and say what part of it has no exposure to subprime, I would subtract the $4.6 billion from the $68 billion. Is that right?
That is correct.
So I'm left with $63.5 billion or something like that, billion in exposure. So then I just want to, let's see.
Are you leaving that document?
Yeah, keep it. No, well, I mean, I'm going to ask some questions. Okay. But you can ask some questions while I get this gathered.
Let me just be very clear. This says net exposure after subordination, which is where they took the amount. You know, it's hard to tell exactly what numbers are being used here.
So keep that one.
Yeah, that's just what
it's
you
a gift.
The next question.
So keep it. I mean, there are a few documents that I want to look at together. So the next one I've given you is an August 07, 2007 email from you to Gwen DeMarco.
It's my assistant.
Okay. Mm-hmm. AIG SEC 9405122-124. And the below email that Terry Watson sends to you, and it looks like she's actually forwarding one. If you look down into, sort of hard, do you see where it starts Andy Ed? And then another paragraph down, and then it says total AIG, AIG FP and AIG GIG exposure to cash CDOs. And then the next sentence down, it says total AIG super senior AAA plus CDS against CDOs of ABS with any subprime RMBS collateral is $63.4 billion, all through AIG FP, which is similar to the number we were talking about before. Is that right?
To what number now?
To the number that I said subtract 4.6
from this. That's also around 63.4.
I'm trying to figure out if this number and the second email I showed you is the same as subtracting the 4.6
It's hard to know without reading the context for this email.
Well, take a minute then. That's fine. What I just want to establish that the number we're talking about of subprime, the notional exposure that has the notional amount that has exposure to subprime is $63.4 billion on FP's books.
I believe that you are correct, yes.
Okay.
Although that's the net after subordination.
Well, that's what I'm struggling with. That's why I'm hesitating.
What does that mean?
With you. Well, there were times in which they were taking in some of the disclosures, when they were taking all the subprime exposure and netting the subordination against it. The problem with that methodology is that it assumes that everything else that's not subprime is good, and everything is, you know, perfect. And the credit analyst in me says that you should present these in gross terms so that you look at the whole panorama, and you shouldn't just netted against one asset class, albeit that was the single largest asset class. So this is a technical point that at some point I go back to FP and suggest that they change the way they present this in some of the slide presentations at AIG.
And that would have the effect of making the number higher.
And it would have the effect of, well, it wouldn't necessarily make it higher. It would just clarify what is the subordination and what is the subprime without letting the analyst draw his own conclusion as to the quality of the non-subprime mortgages that might be in the pools.
Okay. So then, more documents. This is an email that you're that is sent to you by Sonia Hamstra on July 11th, 2007. AIG SEC 9378794. And the first email below that one, who's Sonia Hamstra, by the way?
Sonia Hamstra was running our the AGIC, if you will, the AIGIG structured product, the CDO portfolio. And so she's reporting on some of the exposures that she has. And this would be exposures that might be in the life insurance companies.
Okay.
It's not FP business.
I see. It's other. So if we look at the email from Robert Lewis that's below, that's to you and CC's her, meeting tomorrow with Morris Offit is the subject. It says, Kevin, could you coordinate acquiring information to the extent possible of the effect on AIG of the rating agency actions taken yesterday? So July 10th, 2007, presumably. I think this would be valuable input for our discussion tomorrow and underscore our assessment of our relatively small exposure to this area of concern. So my question is about his comment that AIG has a relatively small exposure to this area of concern. Do you know what he was referring to?
Yes.
When he said area of concern?
Well, he was referring to the CDOs of ABS, specifically.
So
multi-sector CDOs.
Multi-sector CDOs on FP's books.
No. No, not on FP's books. This is on the investment portfolio. This is within the investment portfolio. AIGGIG, which Sonia is managing the CDO book, is an asset management company that effectively manages assets for the insurance companies of AIG.
So this is not a comment about FP.
This is separate. This is additional. And she was managing about a $3 billion portfolio, roughly, most of which was CDOs of corporate loans and investment grade bonds. But she had about roughly $300, $320 million of CDO of ABS positions.
So this is a small portion.
Small portion, yeah. And you can find this information in the disclosures, that the residential mortgage disclosures on AIG's website. That's information.
Beginning in August of 07.
That's right.
Okay. And here's one more. I don't have a whole lot of documents, so I apologize for this, but I do have a few.
I might dispute that already.
Yeah, sorry. I'm going to keep going anyway. Same date, July 11, 2007, from you to Terry Watson, who I believe was the coordinator for the rating agencies for AIG. Is that correct?
She was the head of rating agency relations, and now she's the head of investor relations.
Correct. Okay. And this is AIG SEC 9409350. And she's forwarding an email. The below email at the bottom of the page is from her. And you were on the initial recipient list. And the subject for this one is requests for information on investment exposure to U.S. subprime market. Again, is this focusing on the AIG GIG, or would this also include FP?
No, I believe this is probably... it says respect to our investment exposure to subprime.
It says that we are finalizing a response to a Moody's survey coordinated by Kevin McGinn.
Right.
And had just received questions from S&P. And the S&P questions talk about the dollar amount of direct investment in CDOs, the dollar amount of investment in hedge funds involving RMBS, and then the fourth question on the back is total dollar amount of all other exposure to the subprime sector. Would that have reached FP?
Well, given my response to Andy Foster, I must have assumed that it did.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I remember of this. I mean, we're getting a lot of questions from rating agencies, and Terry was asking me to help coordinate some of this, so that's why I'm involved at this point in some of that.
So the statement at the on Terry's email at the bottom of the page, the last paragraph, they've asked for a fairly quick turnaround on the S&P questions. I'd appreciate everyone's cooperation in making that happen. I also suspect that brief calls to discuss this matter and why it is not a major issue for us would be appreciated. And really, that's where my questions are going, is whether you agreed that this was not a major issue for AIG, given that the earlier emails show that the exposure to subprime through the multi-sector book is in above $60 billion.
The way, certainly, I mean, I would say at this point, relative to the credit side of this, you know, my concerns, speaking for myself here, would probably have agreed with that statement. I'm not yet, you know, unduly concerned about credit losses coming out of the mortgage market. I don't anticipate, I mean, anticipate the market to deteriorate, but not to the kind of degrees that we've seen, that we've seen obviously play out in reality.
But I guess I'm questioning the size of the exposure, mm-hmm, more than the comfort level with, we've structured our business in such a way that we're comfortable with how we've structured our business, but it's still a large exposure.
It's a large number. Absolutely it is. It is a large number. But my you know, our view on this and my own view was that we had structured the business well. We had basically high subordination levels on all the FP stuff. We stopped early on. Most of the, I think it was something like 70-80% of our collateral, 70% of our collateral was first half of 05 and before. We're thinking that there's going to be issues around this book, but nothing of major concern yet, at least at that point in July of 2007. Let me put something in context, if I may. AIG is a huge company, and we have a balance sheet, just a balance sheet alone, with cash assets of over $1 trillion. So one of the contexts that you have to keep in mind too is that although the absolute dollars are very, very large, and they without question are, you're still talking about $1 trillion cash balance sheet with $105 billion of capital. So at this point, these numbers look large, but you do have to look at them relative to the size of our company as well.
So a couple of questions on that, actually. What part of AIG's $1 trillion balance sheet would have actually been available to FP on its obligations on these contracts? As I understand it, AIG has a whole host of insurance companies,
right,
that are regulated by the states, that have very strict capital requirements, right, and that don't allow payments up to the parent company at will, for lack of a better description. So if I'm going to assess really what portion of that is actually available to FP, how would I go about doing that?
Well, you'd have to know what the liquidity was at the holding company, what resources it had available to it, both in terms of cash and in terms of various committed facilities that the bank, that the holding company would have, plus the dividend capacity of those insurance companies to upstream into the parent company.
And did you have an understanding of that?
I did not have those kinds of details.
And would that have been whose purview would that have been under?
That should have been, I mean, I would normally think that that would be the purview of the top guys, the CEO and CFO, especially the CFO.
Back to the first email that I showed you. I'm hoping it's still there. This is the July 17th one. Yeah. It also mentions that AIG was getting questions from all three rating agencies, the OTS and PwC. I'm wondering what your interaction was with the OTS, the Office of Thrift Supervision, which was the parent company supervisor.
We had had various meetings with them we were providing them with quarterly information, concentration report information. We were reporting, so they had a template that would send information to them, and they would come down and sit down with Bob Lewis and me to oftentimes talk about the issues, that questions they would have on that, and I would respond to the questions. They were typically credit questions. That was certainly one line of inquiry, you might say. The second one is they were, at this point, had done some targeted reviews of certain portfolios. And I think around this time, they've started to do a targeted review of the, I think it was the RMBS portfolio. So there was considerable discussion back and forth with them, but it would be periodic. And when they would finish a targeted review of one of the asset classes, they would sit down and discuss their conclusions with us.
Do you have more questions on the OTS?
Yeah, they did a targeted exam from April to July of 07 and looked at FP, I believe.
And the super senior, multi-sector senior.
Do you recall talking to them about that targeted exam at all?
I don't recall. I may have. I just don't recall.
Do you recall, probably answers the next question, do you recall the OTS expressing any concerns about the super senior CDS portfolio during that targeted exam?
I don't,
July 2007 time frame is when they're doing the targeted exam.
I don't remember.
Okay.
Without looking through the record, I just don't remember.
Do you recall if the OTS calls back with concerns after the massive downgrades by the rating agencies on July 10th, 11th, and 12th of 07?
No, it's very possible they did, though. I just don't recall. Sure. I mean, I'm referring in the email to the OTS, and so it's possible they had reached out to us to ask us for additional information.
Right, I think that was on a different area, though. Do you recall if the OTS contacted folks about concerns about the super senior CDS portfolio or the security money portfolio, for that matter, after the subsequent downgrade by the rating agencies in October?
Again, they may have. I just don't recall.
Sure, that's fair. Yeah. Question on a different topic. Mm-hmm. On the securities lending business, we've heard that the New York Insurance Department directed you folks to wind it down in the fall of 07. Do you know anything about that?
I don't.
Do you know if it's true or not?
I don't.
Did you have any dealings with the New York Insurance Department?
I did not.
Okay, do you know if the company did, in fact, start winding the securities lending business down? I will tell you, when you just look at the public filing, the book value is going down after that point, after 3207.
Well, the book value could have also been going down because of certain prepayments on the transactions themselves. There was a lot of dialogue around that portfolio in this roughly in this period, although it may have stretched until 08, but I don't recall that being part of the so-called wind-down decision being a. I don't recall that precisely.
Let me ask you this. The securities lending portfolio is increasing from 05 to 06 to 07, which, of course, is coincidentally in a time that FP decides to stop writing CDS on subprime, and as you probably know, was an area that PwC said, what the heck's going on here? Any recollection about why the securities lending business would increase its long position against U.S. real estate when FP was not, and in fact was making decisions to avoid it?
Well, it had to do with...
Did you say securities lending?
Yeah, I think it had to do with... there's a lot to that question.
Sure. But the general gist of it is there's a conflict between the activities taken by the securities lending business and the activities taken by FP.
This question has come up before, and what we are investing in the investment department is pretty much nothing but AAA product.
But it's backed by subprime mortgages.
I understand that, and you're looking at it through today's lens.
Okay.
And
even
so,
if you looked at it through the 05, 06, 07 lens, I don't know that it would be different. But fair.
Well,
actually, the question I think is how FP looked at it. In late 05, early 06, you had a meeting with Joe Cassano. You were concerned, and that message was not, I mean, either it wasn't communicated or the activity continued in other business units even beyond that decision.
Well, there was concern that was being expressed about the mortgage market generally, but that I was expressing here. And certainly I was concerned also about the banks because the banks were obviously accumulating a lot of both residential mortgages and commercial mortgages. But the securities lending portfolio is not a CDO portfolio, it's an RMBS. It was an RMBS portfolio. And what they had you know, they had invested primarily in just AAA product with, you know, and short-dated paper at that, and it had, all this stuff had, you know, anywhere from 22 to 25% subordination levels, and so you'd have to have roughly 50% defaults to eat into that.
Were those reviewed by the credit committee?
We had, as part of the portfolio review, we would do a portfolio review around this in that period of time, yes.
But you said your concern was with the lower rated RMBS. I'm just trying to figure out why that wouldn't have raised.
Well, remember what I said earlier was that in the CDO book, it was primarily you had roughly $19 billion of mezzanine CDOs, and you had, what is it, 42 roughly, I think was the other piece of it, in high grade CDOs. And high grade CDOs, though, had average collateral that was a single A kind of collateral. That's very different from a AAA short-dated RMBS position where you have, early payouts. So you have to compare, and I think our comfort level at the time, as I recall it, was that we had so much subordination in these positions, we didn't think that those were, horrible. But I'm not suggesting, however, we don't have concerns about the mortgage market, because we do, and obviously I do even talk to the FP about it. So
this may help a little bit. Maybe I'll try to make this the last document I show you.
And you'll forgive me, but I'm like, guy who's got the flights. So
sure.
I know you're working hard.
Yeah. No, that's what I understand. I thought we were 4 o'clock hard stop, so that's the operation, that's what we're working under. So if we get done before then, that would be great, but that's what we're trying to, that's our target. This is an email, November 20th, 2007, AIG SEC 942-2058 to 2059 or 2060. The first email in the chain on the second page is from Paul Narayanan.
Yeah, he was a member of my credit team.
To you. And the first paragraph talks about a hot issues memo. This is his email, is dated November 19th, 07. He says, halfway through this paragraph, as you might recall, the desire for such a reporting mechanism was presumably instigated by the subprime crisis, where some parts of our organization were cognizant of the emerging risks and were able to avoid them, whereas some others were not made aware of it and so did avoid the risk. I'd also mention that you I disagreed with this assessment, since we do have a forum where these concerns are transmitted to those concerned, for example, the portfolio reviews and the various other forums. And then if you turn to your email in response, the first paragraph says, I take issue with your first statement. All units were apprised regularly of our concerns about the housing market. Some listened and responded, others simply chose not to listen, and then, to add insult to injury, not to spot the manifest signs. Nero playing the fiddle while Rome burns is my assessment of that. some interesting language, and wanted to ask you, who listened and responded? First of all, who listened and responded, and who chose not to listen? Who are you referring to in this email?
My recollection is I was referring to a bit to United Guaranty, which is our mortgage insurance company, and possibly, but I think more likely, the AIG Investments team.
So the securities lending unit.
Yep.
So does this jog your memory at all of anything that you might have said to the securities lending unit about this issue?
Well, we had, during the portfolio reviews, we had regularly communicated our concerns about the market getting ahead of itself. And that is really what I'm trying to say here, was that certainly the AIG Investments team knew about my concerns about generally what was going on in the mortgage market, yes.
And what was the feedback from the securities lending unit?
By this time, they've pretty much stopped, no activity.
Well, so I guess when was the message communicated? When was the message you were talking about communicated?
Various times. I started pointing out as early as 05, late 05, my concerns about generally where the mortgage market was going. And it would be reflected again in 2006 and 2007. They would start to tighten up criteria.
Did in fact they tighten up criteria in that time frame?
Yeah, I think they did. I mean, they moved. They seemed to move more from single A kind of paper up into the triple A, double A space. So yes, but they were but it is true, they were actively investing.
And so, what sort of authority would CRM have had to actually shut down investments in things that you found, based on review of other business units, were inappropriate?
I had the ability to raise, the issue had I seen it, to the higher ups as to my concerns about just so much volume being built up, yeah.
Anything else?
A couple of cleanup questions, I guess. Did you have any significant involvement in the collateral calls, in the collateral call disputes with the CDS counterparties?
No, I was present in one meeting sometime in January of 08, is it, I think? Mm-hmm. I'm in a meeting with, I think it was Goldman Sachs, where there was a discussion about collateral. I'm called, asked just to, I don't say anything in the meeting, but I'm asked to just sort of listen in on and to offer any points. I was sometimes brought into these meetings just as, to put things in perspective on terms of what we had in the mortgage part of the mortgage area. But beyond that, no.
Who's at the meeting?
Oh, it's a long cast of characters. It's from our side, I think it's David Herzog, who is pretty much the principal person talking during the conversation. Elias Abayev, I'm not sure Bill Dooley was there. On the phone is Andy Foster from London. Who else was there at that meeting? I don't recall the exact people that were at the meeting.
Did you call the Goldman people?
One of them was, I think, the chief mortgage trader. I have no recollection. I have no recollection of the names. I just don't. Without looking at notes or something, I wouldn't be able to tell you.
The only other question I have is the statute asks us to look at the role of compensation, and I'm not asking for numbers, but I would like to know metrics, what your compensation was based on, how it was determined.
It was flat salary and a modest bonus.
What was the bonus based on?
My performance, as chief credit officer and protecting the company against principal losses, really, that was it. I mean, I can give you the exact numbers if you want them, but...
Okay.
Would you like them? No? Okay.
Was your compensation impacted at all by the financial results reported by the company?
I think that's probably... I think the answer would be yes, in the sense that... the net earnings of the company affect all compensation levels of a company like ours. I would argue they were not highly correlated.
Were you aware that PwC, later than February of 08, was telling the company that it needed to change its compensation system?
I was not aware of that.
I'm not.
Thank you very much for your time, sir. I hope you make your flight, sir.
Yeah.
So do we all. Thank you for working hard to make sure that's possible.
And what we'll do is, as we always do, we'll review our notes. We may have follow-up questions. If so, we'll contact whoever the appropriate person is to contact.
Sure.
And
okay.
Not bring you back in, but just try to get it done with a phone.
Yeah, sure.
Mr. Regan, thank you very much. I appreciate it. It was nice to meet you.
Thank you very much.
Good luck with everything.
Thank you.